neutral one. And the second.
The Beachland, Wilpon, Tunnelton, Conestoga, Bakerton, Curry Run, Smoke Run, Sanatoga, Slickville, Smithville, Flicksville, Max Tony, Youngwood, Edgewood, Hopwood, Punks Tony, Whitehall, Blue Ball, Center Hall, North Apollo, Delano, Renovo, Laredo, let's go. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley, spare man. I breathe the mountain,
air, man. I've had my share, man. I've been
Okay,
but come back to that thought, because now we're really going to start.
Okay.
So, welcome to Barnstorming PA. I'm here with some great friends, Abe Feuerstein and Sue Ellen Henry, and Leisha Johnson-Harvey,
yes.
And Will Hayes. And we have, most of us have just come from hearing Judy and Mark. I know I just said their names, but I'm going to have you guys go around and say hi and, you know, whatever you want about yourself.
Okay. Yeah.
And that kind of spontaneous sound is what keeps the podcast interesting.
And who's that?
Who's that?
Is it Bob here?
What? Ben, is that you, Ben?
Hello,
Hello
Ben.
Hey, Ben. You're talking to an audience of hundreds.
Yeah, very nice.
So what's going on here?
We're recording a podcast.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
I got the songs on my guitar hero clone to work.
So you did? Way to go.
Yeah.
study for that test now.
Abe was like, it'll be really quiet. Come on over. Well, you know, this is the kind of idiosyncratic banter. Yeah,
this is grassroots.
This is grassroots podcasting.
I'm so sorry.
No,
so,
it's fine.
I'm Ben's father, Abe Feuerstein.
All right.
I'm Sue Ellen Henry. I am Ben's mom.
I'm Leisha Johnson Harvey, a resident of Lewisburg.
I'm William Hayes. I am a bartender and.
Musician,
in
sound producer.
I do audio engineering, so I'm going to help.
What's your website? Me and
podcast.
Me and music.
It's me and you, meinu.dance.
Okay, because me and music is your what? It's like your.
My artist's name. I go by me and you, meinu, and then you can find me on social media handles at it's just me and you music.
Okay.
So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Okay, great. So why don't we just, we already, before we started recording, had some great discussion. Maybe we can just pick up. What do people think, you know? Let's start there.
It was interesting being one of, I think I was probably the only person who was under 25 there.
Well, Mark had some college students, but
Nick
from the community.
Nick Jacobson had you beat. He's a high school 17.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Right on.
But you were correct.
The crowd skewed very old.
Yeah, I felt young.
Yeah, me too. Mitch was next to me, and he said, I think I must be one of the youngest people here.
Yeah, it definitely kind of went Will and Nick, the middle-aged, and then a bunch of lovely...
Senior.
Sexta, yes. Septa, senior Octa, senior. Nana. Ben Garvin's dad was there.
Oh my God.
I think he's 100, maybe?
Holy
no way.
He's in his 90s.
That's,
I mean, Penn's
wow.
in her 70s.
Yeah,
wow.
Right.
That's awesome. He's still seeing out and being active.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
And there really was a good turnout. I was really impressed.
80?
Listen,
I think 90.
I remember a time, I don't know if you remember this, Jordy, but it was down at when. There was that cafe right on the park. What was the name
Zelda's.
Of that place? Zelda's, right.
I remember exactly what you were going to say.
Many years ago. And there was Democrats were meeting.
It was 2004.
And people were saying we ought to put signs up.
Yep.
And some people were saying we shouldn't put signs up.
Yep.
Because it might signal to people that Democrats were here. And I was like... I don't understand the logic.
Yeah.
And
like, we'll get more votes if we're secret. That was the logic.
That was the logic. And that made no sense to me at all. And in fact, when we moved here, there was not any sort of Democratic presence at all.
Do you remember in 2002 when Don Sherwood ran this was the first election I, because you guys were already here, right? This first election I voted in, and I went in to vote in the general election, and he was the Democratic and the Republican nominee, and I was like, what the hell? Like, I live in a one party.
What
you're talking about was 2 years after, and I remember it exactly, because it's one of those things when people talk about a revolution start in coffee shops. You were there. I was there. You were probably there.
I was here in 2004.
Yeah, this is 2004 I'm talking about.
Okay.
And we were at Zelda's, and I was sitting as a person on that red couch, and it was one of those times when a lot of people came together.
Yeah.
And it was like this upsurge of energy. And 2008, we're way off of the debate, but 2008, like, I think that happened again with Obama. And, like, to me, I think some of the energy and some of that, like, let's change system energy that we all thought Obama would do, not as, like, a progressive president. I didn't ever expect him to be super progressive, but I thought the way he campaigned, right?
Yeah.
It didn't quite happen, and I kind of think we're picking up, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm heartened to hear that the room was packed and it was too hot, and, I mean, because it seems like a pretty big change from the moment when we first moved here and
where, like, John Peeler told us that, like, since the Civil War, it's never elected a Democratic candidate or something.
Of course, in 1870, I think I would have been proud to be a Republican, right?
You know? Oh,
sure.
I mean, I'm from the South. When people are, like, who are, like, over, like, 35, and they're like, I'm a lifelong Democrat and proud of it. I'm like, what? Like,
I think we mean something different.
I was like, that's like Jesse Helms Dixiecrat shit. Like, I wouldn't be so proud to be a lifelong Democrat.
Yes, when Abe was president, Republican didn't mean more than just non-monarchy.
Yeah, right. But, go ahead.
It's interesting how much, you know, the party has evolved. Just both political parties have evolved over the past, you know, 50, 60, 70 years now. I mean, if I look back to whenever my grandparents were growing up, you know, the Republican Party at that time had a lot more in common with our current, you know, Democratic Party. And that was, you know, really, really interesting to me, that's shifted, but they have not realized that shift has happened, you know? And there's a lot of people and I think this is like the scariest trap for any person to get into is to blindly vote for a party that you believe happens to represent you without getting to know the candidates. So as a young person, it was really fun to come out and see who was campaigning for office. And it was unfortunate that the Republican nominees had scheduling conflicts, quote unquote.
Right.
But, that was a... I just felt very very proud to be a part of this moment in democracy history.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. That's why we have you here on the podcast for that.
Happy to be
under
here.
30 perspective. I want to come back to that, but just, you know, follow through on some of this, like, local history. Like, I think one reason there was a lot of people too is we have a competitive primary. We haven't had a competitive primary in here. Ever.
I never remember a Democratic debate.
Well, certainly not since I've lived here.
No. Yeah. And not only that, but, you know, like, our last candidate, did a write-in in the primary because, like, there was no one even running. I mean, it was just a last-ditch effort.
You know, this is a little off the topic, but
that's our specialty.
Very difficult to find information about tonight's event, right? I couldn't remember where it was, and I was typing in Lewisburg Democratic debate, all this other stuff.
Well, it wasn't a Democratic debate. It was the League of Women Voters, was nonpartisan, which is why Will was saying.
Okay, well, maybe that was part of it, but still, it was like
it became a Democratic debate.
It took me 15 minutes to finally land on the right website with the right info. That was the only website that had information on it.
Which one? The League of Women Voters.
The League of Women Voters was the only one.
Yeah.
It wasn't coming up in any newspaper. Yeah. No newspapers seemed to know about it.
Right.
No.
Right.
I didn't see. I mean, I read the Daily Item every day.
This is so funny because two or three people told me they thought it was well publicized, and there were 80 to 90 people there, and I had the same experience. On like Friday, I noticed, like, oh my God, they haven't been sharing it on Facebook, and I started sharing it like crazy.
And I don't do social media, so I don't.
I didn't see it until you posted it on Facebook.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And I heard the same thing as I walked in the room, how well publicized it was. And I was like, really?
You know, this underscores another difference, which is this fragmentation.
I don't think it was.
Yeah, well, it's this fragmentation, like more and more, I think we have this fragmentation of platforms, right? So people who read the Daily Item, somebody said they're looking at it, but I bet they took out an ad there. If you're on the League's newsletter and you open up their PDF newsletter, they send out once a month. they have a mailing list of hundreds. There are hundreds of members of the League of Women Voters. It's at an all-time high. So all those people were like, I got a piece of direct mail maybe, but I only opened the mail if it's a bill.
The previous debate between the two of them did come up.
I've been to three.
Oh, okay.
This is my third.
One that you were talking about?
You listened to it. Good for you.
I did. Yeah. Yes, I listened to your filming of it.
Recording, but yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
That one was long. This one was a tight ship. This was the best run one I've seen.
It did sound better.
I mean, it was short.
Short. I like the short format a lot.
That is key because, even your involved voter has other places to be, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, even somebody who really cares, like we both care, but we weren't both going
to
be gone.
I mean, I tried to talk someone to coming and, you know, yeah. She was like, someone's got to make sure the homework happens.
Somebody has to stay here and supervise these kids.
This brings up a really good problem that, and I guess it's appropriate that we are getting political and problem solving on this podcast, but
it's so appropriate.
The question that you guys seem to be asking is how can we really inform everyone in the most direct and possible way that is fiscally feasible?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And how do people actually tune in these days? And
that's a good question.
And
you've gone into my head and read my thoughts for the last 6 months.
Yeah. So as someone who notices, I've noticed a lot of, and if we really want to get young voters involved, I think it's important that we start utilizing, small advertisements.
Well, where are the young voters?
They are
where do
on
I find
Snapchat
them? That's what I heard.
Instagram or usually not Facebook that
no,
much.
Not
you
Facebook.
Know, Facebook no, is, has right. become. This
once grandma scroll. Got on Facebook, it was no longer cool.
And also Facebook's ad targeting campaigns don't really, I don't find them to be effective at all.
You know they changed, right?
Like
in the last 2 months?
No, I did not.
They change every month, don't they?
Yeah, but this one really, we are off topic. Well, from whose perspective? But they,
Can you buy some more stuff?
Yeah. In a nutshell, and I'm not an expert on it, but basically they went away from paid content, right? Like New York Times or whatever, getting into your feed to the things that are in your feed are the things that the people you liked, right? So they're trying to get back to their roots of being more kind of an authentic peer-to-peer sharing.
Yeah.
But what that's, and they lost money short-term because there's, there are fewer people seeing ads that people are paying for. I think strategically their bet, it wasn't about anything noble, but I think they saw the writing on the wall that the more that they became more like a traditional media newspaper, or whatever, you know what I'm saying, with a lot of advertising content and got away from kind of a more
this
unmediated... Well, no, they're for profit, but getting away from kind of an unmediated, Facebook replicating what word of mouth is like. Like, that's where they grew.
Yeah.
And when they got away from that and it felt more like commercials, they were starting to lose... people were spending less time on Facebook, and they know that because they know what every click is. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
But that's good to know. Okay, so I want to circle back a little bit. Will, you said something about the candidates and seeing them talk, I don't remember, but I'm going to throw this out. I think between them there was a difference in styles, and I think for one thing compared, for two candidates, Mark and Judy, for listeners who don't know, both of them are first-time candidates. Neither one of them has held political office. And, there's a difference in style, but in general, they're pretty unscripted, right? Or they don't have a lot of traditional message discipline, but I'm wondering what you all thought about the difference in style.
Well, we were talking about this earlier.
And we
were saying that she has more of a kind of a bombastic, kind of pugilistic kind of.
I'm going
to
fight for you.
Confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
I found it.
I mean, I think that her just getting up and walking in front of the table every time that she talked kind of approached that. But it also, I think she's also very passionate and driven, which is good. You know, it's good to see someone who is going to put in the long hours and hard work in order to make, our community better. So I really like that aspect of her, but I think what was a turnoff to a lot of people was kind of just her, I don't think that she has the same charisma as Mark had. And whenever it came to formulating her stances and concepts, I felt like it was a little bit less organized. And outside of that, I thought,
she kept talking about connecting and bringing people together and bridging those gaps. And she did come out, stand up in front of everybody, to attempt to make that connection. But she still had this bombastic, combative delivery that I don't think is going to bridge the gap across the aisle and allow people to work together. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see much more from her tonight on how she was going to bridge that gap. She keeps talking about wanting to do it, and I do think she's going to work hard, but she didn't show how her delivery was going to change in order to bridge that gap.
But why is it on the Democratic candidate to bridge the gap? Like, you talked about, you know, a fighter, and I'm kind of thinking, I don't know, maybe that's what we need to beat the Republican candidate. I don't know. I mean, it could very well be that beating the Republican candidate is just, you know.
The first question, which was actually Mitch's question, he had showed it to me.
Ooh.
Yes.
That's a gold star because the LeeWin voters, they are hard to get through the editorial screens.
Well, so he said, how are you going to get Republicans to vote for you? That was essentially the question. Because in this district, that's the only way you're going to win.
Right.
And
it's probably 2-1 or close Republican-Democrat in the district. Maybe not that bad. Maybe 1.5-1.
So either we have like a measles outbreak and nobody can get to the polls.
Yeah. So you're not going to win.
Barnstorming PA does not advocate violence or warfare.
Sorry.
That's okay. I just had to make that disclaimer.
I don't know how you guys felt about it, but I didn't think that either of their answers were really convincing to me. I would love for all of you
all to drill down on that a little bit more. Like, why do you remember?
I don't remember exactly what they
notes.
Said. Yeah, what did you have in your notes?
Well, let me see if these two remember anything, and then I'll go back to my notes.
Well, Judy kept talking about keeping the conversation going, but talking about keeping the conversation going and actually keeping the conversation going are two separate things. I found that Mark really didn't answer the question, but his approach was more substantive. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly what it was he said.
Oh,
but
it was something about the
partisan gridlock.
Oh, is that what he said?
I'll go into what I have of my notes, but I'm just curious.
I thought it was the thing about healthcare that he said everybody's going to want to go to Medicare for all was how he was going to get the.
That was going to be his approach.
His approach to getting the Republicans on board.
Yeah, for sure. He came back to that several times. This idea of fight for 15, Medicare for all, that populist economic message, kind of the Bernie. He didn't say it here tonight, but I'm on safe ground that, you know, he sees himself carrying forward the Bernie populist economic message, which of course also appealed to a lot of people who voted for Trump and maybe were not deeply ideologically Republican. But do you remember how they answered? Like,
the
how
haves
you,
and have nots.
Yeah, I think you guys pretty much nailed their responses. As far as, I mean, since I did grow up in Mifflinburg, I feel like I'm very in tune with the Republican community.
Yeah, you are.
And I feel like
even in your own family, right?
Yeah, not my immediate family. My parents are very free thinking, and I think my mom is pretty far left leaning, and my dad's a little bit more moderate. When it comes down to really getting that popular vote sway, I think it's about really helping out the people who are currently subjected to the fear propaganda that is the Republican Party message. I mean, you have to figure out a way to disarm it, but also a way to stand with them and help them feel safe, you know? And part of that, the reason that a lot of people blindly support these candidates that are against Medicare is because the way that news organizations like Fox News spin Medicare and a lot of the Republican candidates is that, you know, all of these freeloaders are coming in and they're trying to, you know, take your tax dollars while you're working your 9-to-5 at you know such an at you know wood mode or whatever
fear.
Exactly, and they're you're just you know so mm-hmm. their goal is to say like the money that you make at your job is yours to keep and you can go shoot your guns and all that type of stuff.
It makes them feel like they're fools for working putting in the 9-to-5
only
right.
to help oh, out someone
who's a freeloading somewhere.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
but
yeah.
But what those people are not aware of is how many people, you know, work for small private organizations that don't have the capital to, offer healthcare plans. And that's a scary spot to be in, especially as someone who's 25 right now. I work three different jobs. just to support my music studio and myself. And it's tough, you know, because at the end of whenever my birthday comes around this year, I'm going to be off my parents' insurance, and you know, I have to be really wary as to and very aware in order to make sure that I have coverage. Otherwise, I'm screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those people who grew up in these communities don't take the route that I took, but they don't care. You know, they don't care about someone who chose to take a different route. They, you know, if I choose to take a more risky route in order to get to the career that I want, that doesn't make me a bad person or make their community any worse.
Are you saying they picked more like normal jobs and so they might have health care at this point at 25?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
because honestly,
instead of valuing people that are going for music and arts and other fields.
And I don't mean to speak to like your specific friends, but just in general, sure. Like, you know, 23 to 26 year olds or whatever who have some college or are in community college or whatever. Like, if you just look statistically, a lot of those people are in retail, in the lower wage and service jobs. They don't have good health insurance.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And that,
you know, this thing about, like, you know, we basically subsidize Walmart, like we the taxpayers, because so many of those people qualify for health benefits or housing benefits or food or, you know, STEM benefits, all three of them. Yeah, so
they're not providing a living wage.
I'm just, whenever I think of those kinds of programs, I always think of older people. Like, I'm sure there are underemployed folks who qualify for Medicare, but Medicaid. But I mean, you would think that as a voting bloc, you would not want to irritate the elderly, you know, the seniors in the nation about a program that many of them are relying on. Maybe I just don't understand how it works.
That's funny. I actually had a whole Facebook thing recently where I was pointing out that I find Medicare and Medicaid really hard to differentiate and remember.
Yeah.
And I got about four comments from good liberals being like, oh, come on, it's not that hard.
I get mixed up all the time.
They're like, come on, it's not that hard. You know, Medicare is the insurance program that for the elderly, and Medicaid is benefits, and we need both. We really need both. Why are you trying to attack them? Like they immediately assumed that I was saying we didn't need both. And I was like, you really don't understand. Like, it was actually Susan Jordan was one of them.
I was suggesting a rebranding.
Yeah. I was like, no, my point is that these sound too similar, and I think it contributes to what you were saying, right? Medicaid really is, you know, help for the most vulnerable, who, as I understand it, who need help, right? You're disabled.
Like disabled.
Exactly. Medicare is an earn.
Working.
All ages.
Yeah.
Who,
and Medicare, right. Difference of like two letters, is the one that is an earned benefit that we pay into. But the conflation of the two means people who are paying into Medicare their whole lives, right, they think that someone is taking a free ride.
Yeah.
And so this conflation of earned benefit versus what we might call social support or honestly, you know, charity in a way, like what we do for the people who don't have any other means,
or
they get them conflated.
Or who have aged out of that program, right? And I mean,
right. But it is complicated, right? And it was really interesting to me, like all of these good right thinking liberals in quotes fell into my trap, which was the point is that it's not like one should be called, you know, insurance for all workers, that's Medicare, and the other should be called, this is not a good label, but the label should be about what we do for the most vulnerable.
Right.
But instead they sound so similar that a room full of very educated people can't remember which one is which.
Right. Well, and absolutely. What's weird is when my mom and I go to the doctor, you know, they go through, you know, the 10 minutes of figuring out that, in fact, you haven't moved since the Tuesday that you were there last week.
Yes, that's my number. It's been the same phone number for 15 years.
Yes, 4 East Honey Locust. You know, so, but they always ask, and they always assure that the Medicare and Medicaid benefits are her supplemental.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the interaction with the healthcare
Yeah.
Which is where this is, you know, yeah, yeah. presumably the differentiation yeah. would be crystal clear.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's all.
Even Medicare, I tried to, it's like there's Schedule A, there's Schedule B, there's drug. I mean, I'm like, what? Yeah. What?
And
I'm,
everybody needs a supplemental. Because yeah. it only covers 80% of yeah, anything yeah, yeah. anyway. So yeah. if you have a $50,000 procedure, but look, you're poor, still $10,000.
Poor Will is like the average American listening to people talk about cricket. Like, you know, I mean, yeah. I don't know if you are, but like, you're just like, what? Like, what on earth?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Will just wants to go to the eye doctor.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much it's just like for me, I want to, honestly, I don't find myself really getting too tied into the specifics of you know, healthcare. At the end of the day, I want to be able to work my butt off for whoever I please as far as, like, if I want to serve the community in a beneficial way, and do it with all my heart and work my butt off, it would be nice to have some sort of program that helps me be covered. Certainly in a smaller town like this, where, like, it's not like I'm bartending in New York City or Philadelphia, where I'd be making, you know, $100,000 a year and could and
really bartenders at
craft cocktail bartenders.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But,
well, and that's you'd the thing pay too. $50,000 in rent in New York, but
I mean, exactly. Right? The concept is if everybody is participating, then we spread the costs and the risks across the whole pool, and it remains reasonably priced.
Well, sort of circling back, this is because I think it's relevant. Is to me, Mark. I heard Mark putting a lot of emphasis on. I think we should have a Medicare for All program, and I was like. And that means what?
Yeah.
Right? So
they assume that everybody had that under their...
Do they? Yeah. And he was like, Medicare has a great reputation. I'm like, it does? I mean, I'm not on it, obviously. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just...
Who you talk to and what source of news you get your news from, too.
I mean, for sure, I remember this classic thing in like with the Tea Party in 2009 and 2010, right? That there was some of these town halls. This was like all of it. But this one was like... You know, really angry. She's like, "You keep the government's damn hands off of my Medicare," and it's like, "Honey."
Those are one of the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People arguing against socialism are unaware that socialism is what pays for their fire departments and police departments and their education and.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe Medicare kind of maybe has a shifty reputation because of all the critique of. Healthcare for veterans, right? Which is entirely
which did come
government,
up tonight as well.
Government sponsored. And maybe there's some, you know, kind of slippery relationship there that if it's the government, you know, the government giving you the healthcare as opposed to insuring you to go and get your healthcare.
Healthcare for veterans was where they differed in tonight's debate.
Oh, is that right?
Julie really feels that the people she's speaking with, the veterans in her area, are unhappy with their care. And Mark felt that veterans were happy with their care once they got it, and that the red tape to getting that care, and I can attest to this, I am a veteran, my son's a veteran.
I didn't know that.
So, yes.
Thanks for your service.
Yeah. Which branch of the service were you in?
I was in the Air Force, my son was in the Coast Guard, my other son was in the Marines.
Mm.
Wow.
That's awesome. Yes.
So,
the VA hospital in Wilkes-Barre, I've heard very good things about.
That's the closest facility?
That's the closest large facility. There is a facility in Camp Hill that offers a smaller bunch of benefits.
That's still a long drive from here to go see the doctor.
Exactly.
Yeah. For people, you know, for all of our listeners in Sweden, because Taylor's going to Sweden, we have some. Like, I see the stats. There's four or five, or at least one Swede listens a lot.
I have a schoolmate in Germany.
Camp Hill's an hour and 20 minutes away, so yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah, it's to my notes, you like perfectly nailed it. What was interesting was that was one of the few times they tried to differentiate, you know. Did you all feel like they seemed very similar on the issues?
And they admitted that they were similar on the issues,
they did.
I think.
Yeah, their follow-ups.
If a Republican was there and wanted to watch Democrats engage in cannibalism and circular firing squads, they would have been disappointed.
They were consistent.
They were consistent. I mean, that was, Judy was trying to say, you know, the last question, or the next to last question, I think, was something, it was close to the end, was how are you different from your opponent? And she put a little bit, I mean, it was not attack politics or anything like that, but, you know, what I remember is she talked about the VA, the Veterans Health, and what she was, what I got that she was really talking about was, I've been around the district, I've been talking to people.
Yes,
and he
hasn't.
And he hasn't.
Yeah.
I'm more about I'm basing my positions on my conversations with my constituents.
And did you find that convincing when she was just saying that?
I mean, to a degree. He did have kind of he came across as more measured and contemplative, I guess, or just more measured.
Mm-hmm. I think I found Mark really more studious on the issues, but maybe not necessarily as in tune with the community per se. But at the same time, I think it's just different ways of approaching it. Maybe he's not necessarily always having face-to-face conversations. Like, after I was done talking to him, he gave me a card and said, "Hey, email me sometime and let's talk." And that was cool. And it was interesting that the question that I asked, I got the exact opposite response that I was expecting. Partially because the question had been...
You mean a question that was in the debate?
Yeah.
Oh, what was yours?
What was your question?
I asked what measures they were going to take to basically reduce police corruption and improve the criminal justice system to work for people of all ages and ethnicities. And both of them basically took this stance of, well, we really support our police department and blah, 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 blah. And rightfully so. I understand the way that they were taking that stance. But I got to talk to Mark a little bit afterwards, and I was a little frustrated at the way that the question had been kind of edited, because there was a background going into that. I had said,
you can think you get your question into the lead.
Yeah, you think you can get
it. But then they take out their red pen. I've had that experience. I've had some questions where, like, that's a good, fiery question, and then it comes out it's been it's been from the decontroversifier. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, lately I've been I've experienced intense policing at the local level here, and I've also personally them entering in places with not necessarily following their rights, and that's a scary experience to feel terrorized by, a group that's just looking to get results and just cut right through the tape, and that's frustrating. But also I've realized that I'm not the only person, especially in my age range, that's experiencing this, and it's become kind of a nationwide epidemic. And oftentimes the culprits are local and state police officers. It's not as commonly happening at the federal level. And there's a show on HBO that Wyatt Cenac hosts called Problem Areas, and it covers the whole policing issue in depth. And some interesting alternative view perspectives are studied in that, and different local communities that have tried to take different approaches on policing to actually make it work, instead of making the citizens feel terrorized or afraid every time a cop puts their lights on. There's other approaches that they're
you're experiencing that as a white guy.
Yeah, which is weird as a white person to experiencing that. But I think that partially
you're white.
I'm about as white as I can get. I'm like vampire.
I'm colorblind. I don't see color.
Mistaken for a student.
Well, and at the time I was a student. Yeah. And
mean, not that justifies it, but it might explain to some extent this kind of insider outsider. I don't have to answer to you. These are my rules.
My oldest son used to live here a few years ago, and he had a security position up at the hospital at Evangelical. He was taken in by the police one evening. He did not have a car, so he walked to the hospital. And it was winter, so he was wearing a hoodie. And he got taken in by the police, and he had, he had one phone call. He called me so I could
picked him up for walking off the road on a hoodie?
From walking state police north or on 15, local Milton, and that he was walking north on 15. And a little backstory: my sons are half Colombian, so my oldest son looks more Hispanic. My younger son
this
looks
is Adrian?
More white.
Yeah,
now, Adrian looks more white.
Yeah,
my older
right.
son looks.
I mean, not
a
to be too crass, but I was
skinned.
Like, I think Adrian could pass for white.
Yes, he can. And he did while depends he was at Lewisburg.
Depends on who it is, so, yes. You know, once again.
Yes, and they claim they pulled him over because somebody had just ripped off the local Domino's on 45, and Daniel was like, well, I was walking to my job at Evangelical.
Insecurity.
And yes, insecurity, as not a security guard.
Was it difficult to get him released, or was it?
And, well, I just don't understand why they couldn't just ask him the questions. And I mean, he was right near the hospital.
They
why
could have,
they couldn't yeah,
in the field.
Just go
made
right
or made
in,
a phone call, right?
Made a phone call, or just go to the emergency room and ask.
Yeah.
And instead of detain him at the police station for 3 to 4 hours.
You know, Judy Herschel talked to
Judy
Herschel, you know, in her answer to a question, one of the things I had was that she talked about we need to demilitarize the police. Does that term, does that resonate with your son's experience and your experience that they were militarized, do you think?
I think it was an overboard response.
Right.
I don't know that their response was militaristic.
Right.
They didn't respond with assault weapons and a SWAT team or anything, but they have done, the police in general across the country have done that.
Right.
That was a really progressive thing she said about the demilitarizing the police. I mean, that's
yes.
not a, like a mainstream thing to say at all.
No. In fact, if you know, I would encourage her. I've heard her say this a couple of times, and I like, you know, like I get that term, but I think you need to contextualize that for your average voter. You explain what you mean by that.
I personally don't like that term as just in general, because the police are an armed forces group of our government, and I think if anything, maybe using a different word choice, because I'd say maybe de-mafia. Like, they're more mafioso than they are. They're like the government's mafia.
I totally respect your opinion.
And
no politician is going to say we're going to de-mafia.
Well, right.
The
like, but there's definitely like this like mob culture in policing, and it kind of attracts. I've noticed that like these days, especially, there's less and less regulations in order to become a police officer. And that can be a very dangerous thing. My dad said that last year he saw an ad in the Daily Item that the Mifflinburg Police Department was hiring people right off the street, no experience necessary at the police academy.
What?
To be upholding the law.
I'm on the police.
Don't know that I believe that.
Well, I don't know about the use of that, but I do know that I'm a commissioner for the Regional Police Authority, and we have a hard time filling our positions. There's a labor shortage.
Well.
So some departments might be pushed
so
to that.
They may be taking applications from everybody.
I think that's more so what it was.
There is the physical and mental health exams they have to pass in order to get to.
They have to have a knowledge of the law,
right?
I mean,
but I feel like that's like, okay, the main problem isn't that you pass those things. The main problem, I think, right now is that every single police department in America has a different training method. And oftentimes is pushed by, these large lobbyist agencies will push, them to use tactics that will help out for-profit prisons like ALEC and that type of stuff.
So I want to kind of move away from police, but next time around, there is a civil service commission which has to be appointed to review the police officer applications to hire police officers.
Well, I think you found.
And that is a place for you to put your police activism.
Let's do it
there, because it's actually hard to get people to serve on it. I want to at least one more thing. But one thing I thought really interesting was there was a question that said something like, "How do you get voters to get past emotion and half facts and start voting based on facts?" Do you remember that question? It was like, how are you going to move voters to get past emotions and half truths in the news and get them to vote based on facts?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit curious what you think about
facts. Are facts. Some things are black and white.
Yeah.
Is that what he said, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering what you think about the question and or the answers.
I didn't like the answers
from
either one of them on that.
I didn't either.
Yeah. I didn't feel that they bridged anything.
I mean, like Judy, for example, just if this cues you, she says, you know, this is something that keeps me up at night. People don't believe in the same facts. Mark talked about towards the end that, you know, there are things that are actual truth, and there's black is black and white is white. At the beginning, he was saying it's not easy. he basically was saying, like, when the commercial financial protection bureau, right, when it gets bad, when climate change gets bad enough, when the truth hits people where it hurts, they'll realize. But anyway, I don't know if that helps you.
But he did have a good climate change answer when he spoke about his father.
His dad was one of his best moments.
Yes, and to bridge the gap between the
Do you remember what he said about his dad?
Yes, he said he was a climate change denier,
Trump voter,
but his father saw the economic side of buying the solar panels.
Right.
You know, so you don't hit them with scientific facts. You get them.
Yeah.
To something.
I totally like the image of like a bunch of solar panels on a house with a Trump sticker on the bottom.
And I did. I thought that was one of his best answers.
Yeah, it was.
It was proving that he was able to see the things that could bring all of us together.
I hate the question. I'll just say because I think I feel like it continues to perpetuate this liberal myth that if we can just get the facts to people, they'll make the right choice.
And
right. Like,
yeah.
Some people don't want to hear
the facts.
Yeah.
That's the other problem, is that some people would rather live in their own bubble, their fake bubble that makes them feel happy. And so that's why people like Tucker Carlson get, you know, I think he's the ultimate spin doctor out there, you know, and he gets people engaged. And, you know, I think in order to really get rid of, like, in order to defeat this, we need to figure out a way that we can not only get those people to actually care about factual information and basing things off. Like, the problem is right now there's not even vetting in our media platforms. Like, of course, freedom of the press, but at the same time, should the freedom of the press, like, certainly whenever it comes to news, be allowed to just spew whatever spin bullshit that they want? Because it's like, oh, well, it's my opinion. And it's like, yeah, but this isn't even a fact. This is just a lie.
So what do other people think about this
thing?
Well,
emotions and facts and voters.
I think
emotions
are pretty important. I mean, this is one of the reasons that you asked the question about the distinction in the tenor and the decorum of the candidates, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is partly, you know, is this somebody I can see myself voting for? Is this someone like me or somebody who I think wins elections, whatever that image is? And my impression is that a lot of these kinds of decisions about sort of throwing your weight behind a particular candidate has a lot more to do perhaps with how you feel about the candidate. Did you feel listened to? And or the candidate's position on a single issue that matters most to you regardless of nearly anything else. So, you know, being pro-choice or, you know, anti-abortion is maybe one of these, like, this is the centerpiece. And then after that, you know, climate change and school funding, that's all gravy. But as long as I can get this one thing to line up with my beliefs, which is not a set of facts. These are about beliefs, right? And what you think is the most moral and the right way to have a country run. Not based on, and that's why that Ohio law is so...
What Ohio law? Oh, the six-week abortion ban.
Yeah, the six-week abortion bill,
you know,
because that's when a heartbeat can be found.
This isn't
right?
directly on that issue, but he tried to make a joke, right? He said he's for a woman's right to choose. He's
I support
not for
Planned
the Handmaid's Tale.
I support Planned Parenthood, but I'm opposed to the Handmaid's
Tale.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think that fell really flat.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, yeah.
No,
I
think
it
was well received.
Oh, you did?
I don't know, though.
I felt like some people, my first reaction was, I mean, I got it because I've seen The
right.
Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, but I didn't think very many people got
it
that
old,
of that age
people
group.
People in the room have
yeah.
Hulu.
I think a lot of them think Hulu is followed by Hoop.
Right, exactly.
Hulu Hoop.
Hulu
yeah.
Hoop.
So that was my sense, is that they just didn't get
exactly.
it. I mean, the little lady
yes.
in front of us was going like, what?
Not only that,
she
but I totally appreciate Mark trying to do it, but like I think it needs to be a little bit more like, I support Planned Parenthood, but I'm opposed to the dystopia in The Handmaid's
yeah,
Tale.
Yeah, yeah,
it
needed a little
sort of sound like he doesn't like the show. Like, even I was like,
yeah.
You don't like the show?
It just needed a little context.
It's a hard show to watch.
Especially,
I think it's important and very relational to what is going on in the country right now. But it's not an easy show to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been some stuff that's just come out of, I guess, season two
Whoa, no spoilers.
Just suggesting it's hard, that if you thought season one was hard, just brace yourself. You know, some people I saw on Facebook today were giving it up.
The strange thing is Mike Pence thinks it's a promotional video for a timeshare.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, gosh.
This is like what he wants.
Oh,
okay. So.
I don't think there's any good that can come of trying to leave emotions out of it. I think that's right. I mean,
that's a tough issue.
It's not the way human beings make decisions.
The human being, I mean, facts will matter. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, getting back to that emotion, though, I think that's where both candidates are weak. Because I feel like Judy has too much, and I feel like Mark doesn't have enough.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Both of them need to meet in the middle when it comes to emotion.
Especially with sensitive subjects like abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people don't even necessarily base it off of... a lot of pro-life people, I mean, both my parents are pro-life, and the reason behind that is completely based off of religion, you know, and that's
your far-left mom?
Yeah, which is a weird spot to be in, you know. I mean, actually, my mom's employer, she works for the Nurse Family Partnership and helps expecting moms who don't have the resources to actually become really great parents, and that's a very important alternative, you know. If abortions, you know, are not possible, then nurses like my mom have this great opportunity to be a mentor to young women who have no idea what they're doing and are terrified. So I understand, you know, their perspective on that, but at the same time, what is tough is, you know, it's totally a case by case, you know, thing, and it's tough especially if you don't have a faith life to trust.
So I've lost your thread a little bit. You're saying that about abortion, that they don't have the right emotion, or they have too much emotion on it, or that's kind of where we started.
I think she
was very adamant. She was very much like, I would say she was like an old school, like, I'm in pro-choice. It's 2018. Why am I still dealing with this shit?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't say shit,
right.
But.
Well, yeah,
I think that's what you're responding to. Is that fair?
And I think it's just tough, you know, if you want to win, if you don't want to like alienate yourself from Republican candidate or Republican voters, you know, that is the exact way to completely ruin all of your chances of getting a vote.
I mean, I think you're right, and I think it's really interesting.
You have
the
to
tension,
be sensitive.
There's a tension between her saying, I'm going to work and I'm going to reach out to these people, and then I am never going to compromise on this issue. And not only that, but the language she used, like, I'm not critiquing it, but to me it was like right from the playbook of, I will never compromise on these issues because they're too important. And again, I'm not critiquing that. I'm just saying, Mark's answer that was kind of interesting was, I think it's a choice between a woman, her family, and he said God. I mean, I might have said something like, you know, her God, or, you know, her belief system, and the government has no business. To me, and I'll be curious what people think, to me, that gets you to the same place of saying a woman has a right to choose, but it doesn't use the language that for 30 or 40 years has been the trench warfare between pro-life and pro-choice.
It's the one hot button gridlock issue, right?
Yeah.
You're either for or against, and I completely agree with Judy personally,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think her answer gets Republican votes at all.
His has a chance because language of getting the government out of anything is a Republican mantra, right?
He also took it a step further and said, let's work on the things that reduce the need for abortion to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that is where we all have to be focusing. Because
nobody,
whether you're pro-life or pro-choice, nobody wants an abortion. We all want to prevent the need for it to begin with, and that's where we really need to focus, and I think he was much closer to that answer.
Absolutely.
Well, do people have, like, a favorite moment? Is anybody, you know, I'm kind of trying to head towards the exits here, but
yeah.
something that you sort of will stick out, or let me put it this way. If somebody asked you, like, not who they should vote for, but, like, what was a strong suit for either candidate, anything in that space?
I liked Mark's response on the abortion mm-hmm. issue and better. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't perfect, but it was mm-hmm. better. And I also loved what he said about the climate change. Mm-hmm. I bet the story about his mm-hmm. father, I felt really reached a much bigger population of people.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's something about her. Like I was saying earlier, that I thought there was something almost that could be mocked about her or something. Her that bombastic style made her seem to me like a Kristen Wiig character to some degree. And she had that kind of like these crazy eyes when she was like up there.
I was on the side. I couldn't see that. Yeah.
And so at some point, and I was going to say that I thought that would make her like not like, you know, not someone that people would vote for. But at the same time, I find Nancy Pelosi to be like totally mockable. And she mm-hmm. has been elected over and over again. So maybe I'm wrong. You
in
know,
an
but...
extraordinarily liberal district.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, she's in the Berkeley of Berkeley. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, Judy did seem to be much extreme. More yeah. easy to do a caricature of.
Yes, yeah.
Which kind of makes her a popular candidate for the press.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Oh.
But like, I felt like, you know, they both had very different styles. I think Mark kind of, I don't actually know why I felt inclined to speak to him. I wanted to speak to both, but we kind of ran out of time, and I got to speak with him afterwards, and it was...
You're being polite. I pulled you away so we could come here.
Yeah, exactly. But,
I was like, come on, man.
It was
beer's waiting.
Yeah, it was fun though, and it was interesting to talk to someone who I felt really got me, and going into the debate, I felt like both of them, you know, could do a good job, but I think that Mark would do a better job at getting people who aren't just like me though too. I think he's a very good listener to people no matter what their walk is, and trying to say, okay, well, you know, how can we really make this better for everyone? And whether you vote red or blue, I think he has a good perspective on handling social issues.
Yeah.
Is there any place of potential sexism here that the feisty woman just doesn't play very well?
I think there was,
you know,
a lot,
I mean,
that fell,
I mean,
in
bombastic,
line.
Pugilistic.
Yeah.
I mean, this mm-hmm. does not sound electable, yes. if it's associated with the female body.
Yep.
But a man maybe, and maybe a more soft, conciliatory, contemplative man is sort of, and I'm trying to remember the name of our representative.
Tom Marino?
No, the guy from Dimmock.
Chris Carney,
who was a professor, right, mm-hmm. and a vet, and was sort of, you know, reasoned and measured, and that, you know, that played pretty well.
Mm-hmm. He won the district.
He was only in for 2 years, right?
Four. He won in 06 and 08.
Oh, he won twice?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought he only served one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, I yeah,
he
and
did
so,
4 years.
You know, I wonder if. You know, I wonder if Republicans are ready to vote for a feisty woman.
You know, so I've seen Judy, the first time I've seen her speak in public was last Labor Day, and this was the most like fiery out there. So I think it was a conscious choice. And
like leading up to the election.
I don't know how much has to do with
leading
the election.
To the primary, I meant.
Or just
I don't understand your question.
Leading up to the primary, is it a choice to come out swinging?
Oh, it may be that she feels like she needs to separate herself from Mark mm-hmm. more. That may be part of it. It may be getting more comfortable. She's certainly improved a lot as a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a fair point of comparison because I've only seen Mark more recently. And even stuff like it's like, I hate we have to do this, but we have to do this. You know, like she dresses better. Like, her hairstyle, like I hate that I even have to bring this up, but it's true. She just she comes across as like
put
ready
together.
To go put together. You know,
yeah,
she puts
yeah.
her hair back in a bun now, and that looks better than this kind of like 70s folk singer, you know, Judy Collins thing that she had going.
That's such a tough.
That's such a
thing. It sucks. It totally sucks.
Tell me how Mark was dressed. I mean,
he was wearing a blue
suit,
jacket,
very very politician like, and she was a little bit more like, I was like, wait, is she here for the debate? Or, you know, but at the same time, I kind of liked that about her, was that she kind of had this a lot more of a commoner, common person approach to it. And I could, like, really kind of back that almost in a way. But what stinks is that as far as, like, the majority of people, they're just like what Jordy said, it stinks, you know?
Yeah.
People consume, or people, and this is true with food, too, people eat 70% of like, based off of what they see in front of them. So when you go out to a restaurant, that's the same thing. And I'm sure that the thing also applies to the voting booth. If you see someone who you're like, you know what, the way that they conduct themselves, their energy, their emotions, how they're put together, it almost matters more than the words itself. And that's
it does. And,
well,
and that's
scary
I don't
what
thing.
I was getting back to with the emotional resonance. This mm-hmm. is, so it, you know, it, what people say, I don't know, maybe 30%, and the 70% is, did I feel like he got me? I mean, this is what you said earlier, right? And this is an emotional evaluation, not, now, if he had come out saying, I think Pennsylvania ought to secede from the union, and, you know, or some bananas talk, you may not have even stayed after.
I think the trap Mark can fall into, and we're all here, you know, from very to very, very educated, is, you know, the references to The Handmaid's Tale. Like, I've heard him lead off with, you know, well, one thing I've learned in Trump is some new words. How about kakistocracy?
Yes.
Like, he could come across as like, I'm talking down to you.
Yeah.
And I think Judy's comment about, I know the district, was what I read it as, mm-hmm. was, a little bit, I've been in the district longer, and a little bit of a dig at Mark being too professorial.
That's probably his biggest downfall is, you know, especially in a district like this, the majority of voters, the reason that they voted for Trump was because he used the biggest one-syllable words, you know? He chose very simple nomenclature.
Yeah, but I think it's more than that. It's
exactly.
The, you know, and they, you can, you know, I hear interviews where they defend him. It's even the, this really similar to what I was talking about earlier, like people who feel that they're, you know, being alienated from our society, that Trump is somebody who's not going to, he's not going to toe the line on political correctness. He's not going to play the media's game, whatever media in quotes means. And so it is simple words, but I think it's also that idea that he'll say whatever he wants. You know, maybe Mark was trying to tap into that a little bit, but because he's more educated, it doesn't come across that way.
Yeah, it can backfire. Well,
I mean, Judy actually said, I learn things from people I talk to.
Yeah.
Whereas Mark, mm-hmm. I think in my podcast interview was like, yeah, because we're talking about what we read. He's like, oh, I'm behind on 12 New Yorkers. I'm like, and don't know how well that's going to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I hate that I have to tell him that. Like, don't talk about how you read the New Yorker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't tell people you read the New Yorker. Do that quietly on your own.
Yeah, tell people you read the local news.
Get like a guns and ammo, like a fake cover to go around your New Yorker.
Field and Stream.
Downplay the Columbia Law School thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he didn't bring up he's Jewish.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh boy, they're going to use that. Well,
they will use it against him.
Yeah, they're definitely going to use it.
I mean, the easy thing about running as a Democrat, well, probably anywhere, is you know how they're going to run against you. You're too liberal. You're a tax spend liberal. You're a Pelosi. You know.
Yeah.
You're not a Christian.
Yeah, you're a baby killer. I mean, she mentioned that. That's happened to me when I've been out in the community. People have called me a baby killer. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
I was
really?
At the office when it was on St. Louis Street, and somebody knocked on the door. I was the only person there, and this guy just attacked me from the start, verbally, not physically, but he was calling me every name in the book just because I was answering the door. All I said was, hello, what can I do for you? And he saw the signs in the window, and I was the worst human being on the planet.
I mean,
he knew nothing about me.
I mean, I would want to go, excuse me, I'm a fetus killer. I'm not a fetus killer. I wait until they're out of the womb, and then I kill them.
Jeez.
I don't.
What's crazy
is, full disclosure, I don't really.
What's crazy is that entire attack in general. I mean, like, you're not killing anything. You might enable someone to have the choice to end something, but it's like that's such a triggered thought.
I was trying to wrap up for you guys, and now you brought up abortion. You know,
how
many Jewish members of Congress are there?
I have no idea.
It's probably
six.
Like, I was gonna say you could probably count them on one hand.
Yeah,
I think six would be high.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I just saw something on Facebook today, and it's very stereotypical and generalized, but it was a meme that said, everybody wants to be Irish on St. Patrick's Day, everybody wants to be Hispanic on Cinco de Mayo, and nobody wants to be Jewish on Yom Kippur.
Even the Jews.
I don't know if this would work, but in my head I've been thinking, like, if I were running, you know, for something in this area, you know, about abortion, I mean, I would try and actually maybe say, like, everyone tells me this is stupid, but I'll throw it out to you guys, see what you say. Like, try and acknowledge, like, you think it's murder because it's a person, right? And this is a hard conversation, and we have to come to a compromise in our shared political space about when personhood is. And I hear you. I hear that you think it's murder. And the reason I don't is because it's not a person, and we're gonna have to come to a compromise. My wife, I mentioned this to her, and she was like, "You're crazy." You can. I was like, But
they think it's
but if you think that for whatever reason, you know, it happens at conception or whatever, that it's and we sort of poo-poo it and be like, oh, you don't really. No, if you really sincerely believe that, I mean, I've never had this position, and I never had just a conversation.
In the potential of life, and they're thinking that starts at conception.
But that's exactly what I'm saying.
Nothing that's going to change their mind.
They want a universal, you know, definition, and I would say they want to impose it, and I don't know if this would work, but I'm trying to say, like, we do have to figure out when we're going to say that legal personhood begins, right? And we already have issues about this. I mean, full personhood doesn't come until you're 18. You know, like, we already deal with this. Like, so it's not that alien.
But the pro-choice group is going to say you can't put a definition on personhood while they're still in the womb, because that is going to prevent people that have...
Even you would agree at 8 months, right?
At 8 months, some women need to be evacuated.
Maybe, but you wouldn't have totally elective abortion in 8 months, would you?
Personally?
As a law for everybody. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, in the womb, I don't think that works. Probably.
This is definitely...
See what I'm saying?
This is where things get really bad.
I thought the argument was primarily that a woman's personhood was superseded the potential personhood of the baby or the fetus that she's carrying, and that her personhood
is diminished
under, like, this new Ohio law if this fetus or collection of cells has more rights to life than the person carrying.
Well, since we're into this,
and that's what I was saying, a woman, her life is being threatened by this parasite at 8 months. I say that as a mother of three kids, but there are women who
you lose the election.
I may cut all of this.
This is the best part.
It may be. Because I think we'd all say we're pro-choice broadly, but if we actually stop to, like, dig into the surface, it's not that easy. So let me just try this one more time. At one end, like, 6 weeks, to me that's ridiculous, because what that is in the woman's body doesn't come anywhere close to some idea of full personhood, even if it has a heart. I worry sometimes about some of these biological definitions because technology changes, and that might change the goalposts. The other end, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, and I would say that if it's a situation where it's a life of the mother, then that's a horrible choice, and the family should do it. But if it's an otherwise viable, healthy, what do we call them when they're 8 months? You know, we start to call them baby, right? Whatever, fetus seems wrong. There's a point at which I would be like,
it's still a fetus.
Okay, but I'm like. You know, if it at 36, 35, 34 weeks, like, a purely elective abortion, I'm not comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. I'm like, that sucks. Like, if you want to call me a biological essentialist or whatever, okay. But I'm just saying, like, that's the reality of it, right? That you know, that collection of cells has gotten to the point at which I would be uncomfortable saying that it's purely a woman's choice, purely electively, without any, I think I would be okay with that. And 30, what is Roe v. Wade put it at? Like 24 weeks, 22 weeks?
Yeah.
That is right. A compromise somewhere in between, like, those two places.
First trimester, essentially? Or?
But does that even make sense as framing?
Second?
I mean,
yeah,
maybe you don't agree.
It used to be 26 weeks.
Right. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, kind of like very close to conception, we would all say, no, there's no way that's taking a human life.
We would say that.
We would.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about us.
Yeah. Well,
but do you know what I'm saying? That pro-life, pro-choice, I think, is actually maybe somewhere often on that continuum. And way over here, I would agree with a lot of people about, like, except for the health of the mother, that's probably, I wouldn't want that to be purely an elective choice. And so that gap in between keeps shifting by technology and other things.
But to, like, to skirt that issue to some degree, wouldn't we be able to just all agree that there's a lot of room to be made for, like, just decreasing unwanted pregnancy in the first place?
Yeah.
Well, ultimately, this issue this is a bigger issue than just abortion, though, and that's what everyone forgets. This whole issue is about population control, right? And so the more people that are on Earth, the less wealth every per person has, you know, and it makes it harder for everyone to live comfortably. And there's only so many resources on our planet. So there's two ways that we resolve this issue. One side takes the preventative measure, the other takes the reactive measure. So the preventative measure is, okay, well, this pregnancy was a mistake, we're just not ready for this yet, you know. We're not at that point in our lives where we can support a child. We can barely support ourselves, you know. Let's keep growing and maturing and handle this at one place. Whereas the other perspective is, okay, you know what, let's go to war. And, you know, and that's like the government's executive decision. So it's weird that the Republican Party's mindset is like, oh, well, we can't have abortion, but we're going to murder our boys, you know, at the expense. And that's a terrifying and disgusting thing to think about. But that's the reality of it, is like the whole army vendetta, half of it is not necessarily always necessary. If we can solve things with diplomacy, we should do it.
You know, as messed up as war is, it usually doesn't do much to set back human population growth.
Minus World War II.
Yeah, but, you know, giving more women more access to birth control and sex ed does a lot more to slow population growth than wars.
Well, exactly. Exactly, and that's the point. Is like,
let's make it preventative,
so we don't
for
ever
everybody
have to
on an equal basis. You know, let's not just provide birth control and education for the wealthy and the people that have. Let's you know, also have
so
it for the have-nots.
Babies are parasites. Condoms for everybody. That's your platform?
That's it.
All right. I'm voting for you. Thank you, guys. You did great. Breathe the mountain air, man. Travel like I had my share, man. I've been everywhere.